You're listening to the WP Tonic, WordPress and Tech, focused on building a successful business in WordPress aimed at the WordPress professional and power user. Join Jonathan Denwood and Kurt Von Annen as your host and co-host as we bring you great discussions from around the globe.
Welcome back, folks, to the WP Tonic Show this week in WordPress and SaaS. In this show, we're going to be discussing some great subjects like how to do paid discovery the right way and a number of other topics. We've got a great guest with us. We've got Laura Elizabeth with us, the founder of Client Portal. And also she does some great courses around paid discovery and some other subjects that will really interest you if you're a freelancer or a small agency owner. It should be a great discussion. I'm going to let Laura quickly introduce herself. So Laura, would you quickly like to do a quick intro to the tribe?
Yeah, so I mean, you did a pretty good job. I'm Laura and I'm the founder of Client Portal, which is a WordPress plugin that for freelancers and agencies to give them a place to store their deliverables for their clients. I also have a few other products and courses on things like, you know, paid discovery and lots of templates and things for freelancers and a design course as well. So yeah, lots of things, everything just for freelancers and agencies, since that's my background.
Yeah, loads of goodies. And I'd also got my patient and great co-host, Kurt. Kurt, would you like to introduce yourself to the new listeners and viewers?
Sure thing, Jonathan. My name is Kurt Von Annen. I own an agency called Mañana Nomás. We focus largely on membership and learning websites and specialize in moving SCORM for enterprise clients to a more affordable package.
Like I say, we're going to be discussing everything around paid discovery and a load of other subjects. It should be a great discussion. But before we go into the meat and potatoes of this great show, I've got a message from one of our major sponsors. We will be back in a few moments, folks.
Hi there, e-commerce store owner. At Omnisend, we help more than 100,000 e-commerce customers just like you sell their products. We're an all-in-one email and SMS marketing platform that helps you reach your customers, grow your audience, and increase sales. In fact, our customers have seen incredible results with Omnisend, averaging $72 in revenue for every single dollar spent. And if you ever have a question, our award-winning customer support team is available 24/7 every single day. That's one of the reasons we have more than 6,000 glowing reviews and ratings all across the web. So get started with Omnisend today and start growing your business with better email and SMS marketing.
We're coming back, folks. I also want to point out that we've got a great resource for you freelancers and micro agency owners or power users. We've got a curated list of the best WordPress plugins and services aimed precisely for you, plus some special deals from some of the sponsors of the show. You can get all these great goodies, these free goodies, by going over to wp-tonic.com/deals. wp-tonic.com/deals. What more could you ask for, my beloved WordPress professionals? Probably a lot more, but that's all you're going to get from that page. So Laura, let's delve into your background. How did you get into the semi-crazy world of design and WordPress and web development? You look rather sane, so I'm always puzzled how people get into this world. I'm bonkers, so it's totally understandable, but you seem sane. So how did you get into it, Laura?
Well, thank you. It's nice to be seen as sane. Not sure how true that is, but it's good. So I started off way back in university. I studied design, thought I was going to get more into print.
What's that?
Print. I'm showing my age now. Well, I came out of university when, you know, websites were still really just HTML and CSS and Dreamweaver was still around. Quite a long time ago. And I got an internship at an agency that wanted to start getting into web design. And because I was the youngest straight out of university, they assumed that would be what I knew how to do. It wasn't, but I quickly learned. And yeah, web design became just my thing. I became a, after my internship, I worked in an agency for a while, and then I went off on my own, became a freelance web designer, did that for probably, I don't know, a decade or something before Client Portal came along, which was really an accidental product, which I'd made for myself to use with my clients to help with, you know, onboarding and stuff. I didn't want to use big project management tools because it was too much for me. So I kind of made, it was one of those scratch your own itch, make your own. Talked about it a lot at different conferences, and it turns out a lot of other freelancers had the same need. And Client Portal became a product, and it became a WordPress plugin. And then in 2017, I think I launched it in 2016, and in 2017, it became my full-time thing. And yeah, like I said earlier, alongside that, I also create, you know, courses and, you know, products, downloads, templates, and all these bits and bobs that helped me when I was freelancing to hopefully help others.
That's fantastic. Over to you, Kurt.
Well, I think I'm just going to kind of lean really hard into our second question, you know, like what key things do you feel freelancers or micro agency owners need to understand? But as you start talking about, you know, you scratched your own itch because everything was too involved or too whatever. As an agency owner, I have a lifetime subscription to this giant platform I use as a client portal that has probably 80% more stuff I've never seen, used, or done anything with, right? I track my time, my projects, and I generate invoices out of this thing. But I know it does a ton more. So I'm really interested to kind of understand how you came up with Client Portal, what were the key features you looked at, and what drove you to a more simple answer?
Yeah, so really I started, you know, I started with project management tools as well, because I felt like my whole process, you know, working remotely, it was a little bit messy. Everything was just in email, and all the files I sent were in emails, all the links I sent were in emails, and they'd get lost in these giant threads. And, you know, I'd get this problem that I had for years, and it wasn't a huge problem, but it was annoying enough to make me want to do something about it, where clients would constantly be asking me to resend them files. So, oh, that invoice or that deliverable, or even the logo that you did for me, I've lost it on my computer that you did 5 years ago. Can you resend it? And I was constantly just going through my hard drive, just trying to, you know, find files for people who couldn't seem to, you know, organize them themselves. So I thought, well, I want something a bit more professional. So I tried a project management tool, and they're great. I am still a big fan of project management tools, but I found that my clients didn't really use them, and they wouldn't want to log into them. They didn't want to learn them. And yeah, they still resorted back to email. So it didn't really solve the problem. It just cost me money each month. So I thought, well, there's got to be some kind of middle ground, right? Like, I don't want to just go back to just email, but I don't want to force them into a project management tool that they're not going to use. So I thought, well, why don't I just create a login on my website where, you know, I'll put their files here. I'll put all the useful links, all the random bits of information that they might need to access in this login area. They can log in anytime. And if they ever need something, it's right there. But they can still email me. You know, we still communicate via email because that's what they like. And to be honest, I'm fine with email. It was just when things were getting lost that it would be a bit more difficult. So that's pretty much why I created it, the problem it solved. And I found this simple tool just ticked all the boxes that I needed at the time.
Yeah. And then as you're talking, I'm thinking about how many different freelancers and agency types that Jonathan and I talk to in our lives. And everyone's got their own like wicked combination of nonsense, right? The Google Drive, OneDrive, Dropbox, and all these subscriptions and premiums. And no matter what you use, clients are always like, well, we use this, right? And so I think having your own platform, and I'm just going to go out on the ledge and kind of like, maybe this is copy for you, right? Like I'm supporting your effort. I think when you say, well, no, this is our custom platform, this is what we use, this is our process, I think that has so much more stick with the customer than some Dropbox, Google Drive, because then they'll say, well, let's just use our Google Drive. Let's just put everything over here on our Dropbox, and it's a nightmare.
Yeah, exactly. It just, you know, it makes you look like you've done this before, which was always another problem that I had. Like, I wanted clients to feel like I had a process and I could kind of lead them through the project rather than maybe feel like they had to lead me or something like that. But again, like these tools that you use, like Dropbox, Google Drive, I use Google Docs all the time, Google Sheets. It's like everyone has their own little stack that they find the most useful. And these tools are all really great at doing what they do. And if you find like a project management tool, sometimes they'll try to do all of these different things, but it's not as good as just these individual tools. So, well, I thought, why don't, you know, I let myself and other people use the tools that we already know and like, but then just bring them in to one kind of branded hub, one branded portal where clients can access them. So they're not asking for this Google Docs link that you sent them, and they're not asking for this PDF or something time and time again, because it's all in one place. And it just looks a little bit more branded because it's, you know, to your brand while using the different software that you already like.
Yeah. What do you think were the pain points for you in developing this tool?
From like a technical perspective, like...
Yeah, just in general, like as you were like, I'm going to scratch my own itch, right? I really love the way that you put that, right? I'm going to scratch my own itch. I'll make my own thing. But as you started to do it, like what were the obstacles or the pain points in the process?
Well, the biggest one is that I'm not a developer, so I can't actually make a WordPress plugin. That was the most difficult one. But the way it kind of worked, like, and this wasn't intentional. It's sort of looking back, it was really good that it worked this way. Was that I didn't set out to make a tool and sell it. I had made this tool and I thought, well, I'm going to teach people, you know, not necessarily how to make their own, but I'm going to give people this idea, you know, in conference talks and on podcasts. So I'd go and I'd talk about onboarding clients and I'd say exactly what I just said to you, which is, you know, these different pain points. And I would say, you know, a way that you could solve this would be to just create a private area on your website and have clients log into that. And I'd show a screenshot of the one that I made, assuming that people would then go and make their own. Yeah. But instead of that, what the response was just, I mean, I still think about it today. Like, there was one conference in particular where at the end they went around the room and said what was the most viable thing they got out of the conference. And about almost over, I think over 50% of people that were asked said Laura's client portal idea. It was just exactly what I need. And people would come up to me saying, you know, will you make this into a product? So the conference organizer had said, you know, my audience is really interested in this. If you'll make it into a product, I'll promote it to them because they clearly want it.
Yeah.
So I had that kind of head start in a way, because if I just built the tool and tried to sell it, I'm sort of starting from nothing. That's kind of hard. But I had people who were already interested in the idea. And what I did was I said, okay, well, what I'll do is I'll pre-sell it. You can have the HTML CSS template as it is, and I'll give you instructions on how to do it. And assuming I make enough money to make this into a WordPress plugin, I'll do that and you'll get lifetime access as like an early adopter. If not, I would obviously have to refund everyone, which would be pretty bad. It's kind of like a Kickstarter, right? And luckily, yeah, more than made enough for me to pay a WordPress developer to make it into a plugin without me having to do it or dip into anything else. So it just kind of went from there, really.
Nice. That is a perfect masterclass example of like what Chris Badgett would say is product market fit. You know, but they need the demand, you fulfilled it, and, you know, Shangri-La. Jonathan, over to you.
Yeah, thanks, Kurt. So, Laura, you've got a new digital product aimed at helping freelancers and agency owners with paid discovery. So what made you develop this digital product, and what are one or two of the main things that you think people would get from obtaining it from you?
Yeah, so the other thing that I kind of do is it's called Project Pack, and I basically made a bunch of templates or repurposed a bunch of templates that I used in my own project. So I normally did web design or branding or something like that. And I basically took all the templates that I used And then, you know, that is a product to sell to other people who want to do, you know, web design or branding projects. So it would have things like, you know, sitemap and invoice template and, you know, a contract and just all the bits that I used. And the paid discovery one is a new one because I actually, it's a bit kind of complicated, but I actually help out on my husband's business. He has like a side agency and we do a lot of paid discovery. And so, you know, I thought, well, this would make another great pack. And it fits with the client portal thing because I make all these packs so they integrate with client portal. So if you offer paid discovery and you have client portal, you can buy the pack and you can import them into client portal. You don't have to have client portal to use it though. It's a standalone thing. And really, I just wanted to give people templates that were really used by real agencies to give them a starting point. Because I remember when I was freelancing, you know, you can buy templates online anywhere, but it's not using real content. It's not like the behind the scenes kind of secret sauce of what people are actually doing. So I wanted to just basically give people real content, real documents that were actually being used to help them add different services to their pipeline. So the paid discovery pack is the newest one and it's my favorite one because I think it's one that everyone can add. Paid discovery is basically where, well, it is what it sounds like. It's the discovery phase, which normally includes like a proposal and research and all that kind of thing. But instead of doing it for free, you charge money for it. And I find it's such a lucrative income stream for your business. I also find clients get a lot of value out of it. It sounds to a lot of people that it could be quite a hard sell, but I've always found it's a really easy sell. And I just think almost every freelancer and agency could offer some kind of paid discovery to their clients. And then the pack basically just shows them all the documents that we use that you can kind of tweak and edit and use it yourself and start offering it.
That's fantastic, Laura. I think paid discovery is extremely important, but my experience is a little bit different to yours, Laura, and I just want to be totally honest with you and upfront. My experience is most clients really don't want to pay for paid discovery, and they're very resistant in doing it. It does depend on the type of client. If you're dealing with a small, medium-sized company, and the person you're dealing with has some experience in IT or marketing, they're probably up for it. But if you're dealing with a single entrepreneur or somebody that they are extremely resistant to it, just want your feedback of what I'm basing my experience on, Laura.
Yeah, so I think you're completely right. So when I said almost every freelancer, the thing that I should have added was the fact that the clients that won't go for it or won't benefit from it are the ones who are quite new, you know, in the whatever space they're doing. They might be new business owners or something. And they don't see the value in it because essentially all they hear is, well, I'm going to pay for something that everyone else is doing for free. And really what they want to know is like, who's got the lowest price and I'm going to go with them. The people who really benefit from it, and why it's a really easy sell, particularly for us, are the people who've been through projects before and they found that a poorly planned project and a poorly scoped out project can cost them more money than paying for paid discovery. And the difficult thing about talking about paid discovery is that it can be quite vast. It can be on the lower end, which is literally like what we talked about, which is scoping out a project and paying for it. It can go all the way to the other end, which is, you know, full on consulting. Like, I am going to take your business and everything that you do, and I'm going to give you a roadmap on where you are now and where I think you need to be, and then how we can help you get there if you choose to work with us. So, you know, people can charge $200 for paid discovery, or they can charge $10,000 for paid discovery. That level of consulting is kind of different. So it does make it a little bit harder to kind of talk about. But when you get into the more consulting end of it, the sell becomes easier because people particularly if you're an expert in something, people want you to guide them and to give them, okay, here's step by step, what do I need to do? And then an option of how to do it either themselves, hire someone else, or ideally hire you.
Yeah, I agree with about 80% of what you've just outlined. But I think there's also, I was talking to a possible client last week, and it was a major legal association, and they had been let down. They'd gone on to the freelancer marketplace and got work done on their learning management system, and it hadn't really worked out that well. And they had a very long list of things they wanted to be done, and they were extremely resistant to pay for any paid discovery. And what's it about is that they wanted me to take the liability. They wanted me to take the risk of underbidding. And they wanted me just to blindly go in. And in the end, I just gave them a very broad figure that basically just came out of my backside, basically, that covered the risk that they were attempting to put on me. Am I just a cynical old geezer, or is there some truth in what I've outlined?
I would imagine there's truth in what, I mean, that's what happened. So of course it's true. I don't know. Maybe it's like the type of clients that I work with. I haven't worked with anyone in the legal.
Well, they tend to be a handful, don't they?
Yeah, I can imagine. I can honestly imagine. Like, I remember when I was back in my agency days and, doing the whole...
I just wanted to interrupt. I'm not being rude. I just want to draw you the picture. I was talking to the chairman, and they brought in, I think it was a marketing agency, and I think the marketing agency had just hired people from Upworks, and it hadn't really worked out that well. And they were on the retainer, and they just wanted some fool just to save them. And the chairman was just telling me how large their association was and the largeness of the clients, yet they were totally resistant in even thinking of paid discovery. So I found the whole thing quite hilarious, really.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're always going to get, clients who just maybe aren't a great fit.
Okay.
And it's easy to say, like, from where I'm sitting, it's easy to say, oh, just don't take those clients on, or just say, no, we're not a great fit, not going to do it. But I do understand actually being in that situation myself where, you don't want to lose out on that. You've still got bills to pay, and it's kind of scary. But what I would say to that is that it doesn't sound like they would be a great fit. You have to believe the benefits of paid discovery yourself, and you have to genuinely believe that this is what's right for them as well. And as long as you believe those two things, you basically make your case to them, and then they, to be honest, have the right to say no, just as you have the right to then say no for the project.
Yeah, I think before we go for a break, Laura, what I was trying to point out is that I think, like you laid out, you got the kind of new client, and then you lay out an enormous amount of clients that are not resistant. I wasn't trying to be negative. I was just pointing out there's also a subset that subconsciously or consciously are in the new sector, and they still don't want to pay for paid discovery because subconsciously or consciously they really want you to take on the risk level. They're looking for the best quality work for the lowest price possible, which is understandable but also totally incompatible. So that's where the conflict comes. So that's my diatribe, but you're used to it. We're going to go for our break, and we will be back, and we've got some great discussions about onboarding and other subjects. Laura's got an enormous amount of experience in this area. It's been a great discussion so far. We will be back in a few moments, folks.
Tired of hosting providers that can't handle high traffic loads? Convessio is here to help. Our platform can handle any amount of traffic, all without slowdown or crashing. With immediate Slack support, performance optimization, and a team that thrives on resolving technical challenges, your e-commerce business is in safe hands. Learn more about Convessio at convessio.com.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Lifter LMS, the leading learning management system solution for WordPress. If you or your client are creating any kind of online course, training-based membership website, or any type of e-learning project, Lifter LMS is the most secure, stable, well-supported solution on the market. Go to lifterlms.com and save 20% at checkout with coupon code podcast20. That's podcast20. Enjoy the rest of your show.
We're coming back, folks. We've had all a feast about paid discovery and my gloom and despair about it. But Laura wouldn't have it. She's been upbeat. Before we go into the second half of the show, I just want to point out, if you're really looking for a great hosting provider that provides all the plugins, services, support that you're looking for your bigger jobs as a freelancer and as a micro agency, why don't you look at utilizing WP Tonic? We've got over 15 years experience in the WordPress space. We have the leading podcast in the professional freelancer space. And we'd love you to become a partner with WP Tonic. You can find out more by going over to wp-tonic.com/partners, wp-tonic.com/partners. And we'd love to build something special together. So over to you, Kurt.
Well, I was just listening to you and Laura talk, and I think a lot of agencies, especially freelancers, they consider paid discovery to be like this, you know, strange voodoo, witchcraft, sorcery thing, right? Like, we hear about it, but we don't really get to understand it or visualize it in practice. So I like that you focus on it. For some people, asking for $500 in discovery is like you're asking someone, oh, can I please borrow your left arm for a while, right? Like it just feels like the world. And then just from personal experience, I was literally brought into a call with a major agency and they wanted me to talk about LMSs to their client, like as the expert, right? And then I discovered after the call that nobody knew anything that I was talking about. And at the end of the call, I found out.
Oh, I have that regularly happen to me, Kurt.
And then he charged $10,000 for discovery. And that's when it hit me like a ton of bricks. Like, the number doesn't matter. It's the expectation or what's being covered or what's being filled as the service is what matters. And the value is the value you assign to it. And so I find it all a very, very interesting. It's a complete vertical in an agency. Like, it's a revenue vertical that so many don't explore. So how, for you and your product, how do you get agencies and freelancers to understand there's even a need? Like you can fulfill the need, you can cure the pain point, but how do you get them to even recognize that?
Can I butt in just for a second? So, Laura, I think Kirk's got a fantastic question here. I think in the second half, we didn't deal with the most important aspect. How do you make an assessment of the client's attitude towards paid discovery in your initial consultation with them? How do you fill them out? How do you judge their attitudes?
Well, I think this is a really good question. In our agency, we do have an easier time of it, I'll be honest, because we sort of specialize in one very specific thing, which is segmentation and personalization. And the agency is kind of known for that. So when people come to us, they say, you know, we want to figure out how to segment our audience and how to personalize the right offer for them. Like, can you help us do that? And then we always say we've got, you know, canned emails that we send to everyone. We've got, you know, a little guide that sort of explains what road mapping is. And we always say, you know, well, the first step in almost all of these kinds of projects is we do what's called a road mapping session. This is what it is. This is how it works. This is what you get. This is how much it costs. And we have all this like in a little guide. And we have such a high success rate with it. Almost nobody says no, because actually that's kind of what they're asking for when they first they first contact us anyway. So I know that's not necessarily super helpful to everyone, because not everyone has that kind of niche, but that's why it works so well for us.
Oh, it's totally understandable.
Yeah. But it can also work. The thing about paid discovery is sort of like I mentioned earlier, because it's such a spectrum, you know, ours is more on the higher end consulting, which I do think is an easier sell because they're going to get something really valuable out of it. On the lower end, when it is paying for discovery, paying for a proposal, I do think you are going to see less people go for it potentially. But one way you can kind of get around that is you can always offer to, you know, take the cost of the paid discovery off the work, assuming that you go ahead and do it. So it's basically, you know, you're saying, right, I want to really go through this project and I want to give you a plan that you can take to any other freelancer, any other agency that, we'll just say a website because it's just what I know, that tells me how we're going to do this website project, everything we need, everything that could go wrong. We're going to really go deep. But this is quite a lot of work to put together a brief like this. I'm the expert, so it makes sense that I do it, not you. You're not a web design expert. That's why you're coming to me. And I'm going to give you this. And this will be really valuable because it's going to save you, you know, so many headaches. Hopefully they just understand that innately anyway. If we end up working together, you know, I'll take that cost off. But if not, you can just take this. You've got a brief that you can take to 10, 15 freelancers and agencies if you want. And it's all scoped out. And it's going to really lower the risk. And it kind of becomes a slightly easier sell, but it's never going to be 100% success rate. I don't know if that.
Well, funny enough, that's precisely the language that I utilize, actually. So, sorry, yeah. Kurt, I interrupted there. I wasn't being rude, Kurt.
It's okay.
You want to continue, Kurt? Sorry.
Well, my question was more towards the freelancers and the agency people, because you have this product, right? You have this digital product. You want to teach people the benefits of this paid discovery thing. But how do you educate people that that's even a pain point or needs addressed? Are you finding that there's a ton of demand on the subject matter, or are you finding it's still an educate and supply the need situation?
So I think it's something that I feel very strongly that so a lot of people can benefit from. Yeah. I don't necessarily get a lot of people coming to me saying I need to learn about paid discovery, but because I've got like an audience of freelancers and agencies, I do tend to talk about it a lot because I think it's really useful. So I kind of say, you know, this is what it is. I don't have a course on it or anything like that, but I do have courses that I can kind of recommend on it. But the reason I created the pack was because I just thought, you know, for me personally, the best way for me to learn something is to just see how other people are doing it. More of like a behind the scenes kind of thing. Sometimes, you know, courses and things can sometimes go into a little bit too much detail, or on the other end, be almost a little bit too vague. You know, you kind of get the concepts, but you're just like, okay, so what does that look like? What does the email say when you're actually proposing this? What does this document that you say you send clients actually have in it? When you say, how does it run? Well, how does it run? So just being able to give everyone all the documents we use, and there's quite a lot of them, actually. I can't remember exactly how many. There's three phases, and I think there's probably about seven documents in each phase or something. And they can kind of go through, and you just see firsthand how we run these projects. Like I said, again, it is more on the consulting end, but you can still use some of them if you want to do the more proposal kind of end. And then for each template, I've got a very short video that just kind of explains, like, you know, sometimes they're like 1 or 2 minutes, that just kind of says, so this is the document. These are the bits that you'll need to edit. any quick tips or any like things that I think are useful to know? This is when you'd send it. This is why you'd send it. This is when you shouldn't send it, or something like that. And I find that kind of, if you have that, you don't necessarily need the course or a course in order to do it. But in terms of telling freelancers and agencies that they have a need for it, Project Pack isn't my main thing. So I don't really try and like oversell paid discovery. I just really think it worked for me. It's a really good income stream in itself. And once you do it, it's quite repeatable and quite easy. You can also hire other people to help you with it. So it's scalable. It can be kind of, it's not really fully recurring, but you can book like X amount in every month and it can kind of be almost semi-recurring. So I just think it's kind of really good. So I just come, I go on podcasts like this one and I just talk about how great it is. And hopefully some people listen and go, oh, might consider it one day.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you from my own experience, I'm 100% in with you. I didn't used to charge for discovery and I found myself making proposals and throwing them out into the ether and going, well, I didn't hear back. And then the follow-up and the babysitting and the nonsense. Whereas if you say, hey, I'm going to charge you $1,000, $1,500, $2,000, whatever it is, that person has a vested interest in getting back to you, right? Now you're not chasing people down. They've made an investment. You've supplied an answer, and then they're going to come back to you and be like, it's a yes, it's a no. We want our credit towards this job, like, because they've made the investment. If the people won't make the investment, then they're the wrong client for my agency. That's kind of where I've gotten to. But I know for a lot of people, that's a really hard line to draw, because so many start out desperate for each job, and then you grow to the point where you're like, I really don't need all these jobs. Like, that there's more work going into this job than I'm getting revenue for. And that's a hard part of growth.
And I think it's the hardest part. Yeah. Like taking that jump. But all you need to do is try it with one client, you know, just one, and just say, charge quite a small amount and offer for it to be taken off the proposal and just see how it goes during, you know, everyone gets the feast and famine cycles of freelancing. During one of the feasts, just give it a go and see what happens. And I think you'll probably be surprised in how well it goes. You'll probably love it like I did.
Yeah, it's great advice. Jonathan?
Yeah, I think that's fantastic. I also think looking at your website and client portal, I think the other digital products that you're offering, you're utilizing them in a very sophisticated way as what I classify as educational marketing. The other products really introduce you and your main digital offering, which is client portal. Everything else kind of drives them into that funnel, doesn't it? So I think it's quite sophisticated. So let's talk about onboarding, because I think this is another enormous area where I think I've failed consistently on. And I think having documentation and maybe utilizing client portal, but also having a clear onboarding methodology is really important. And a lot of freelancers and micro to medium-sized agencies don't have a coherent onboarding process. Would you agree with that? And if you do, what are some of the things that you would like people to understand that are really important when it comes to onboarding?
Yeah, I think there's probably a lot of truth in that, you know, usually what tends to happen is, you know, freelancers or even small agencies tend to get a new client and just kind of onboard ad hoc, just as it happens. There's no real process. It just kind of happens. And, you know, it's fine. It works. But I think having an actual onboarding process is really valuable both for you and your clients, because you can, you know, your clients want to feel like you know what you're doing. You've done this before. It gives a really great first impression to have good onboarding. But also good onboarding, you don't have to do an awful lot for it. It can be very easily templated out. And I don't have fancy onboarding sequences at all. But there is a process that I kind of follow. And I have things like, you know, templated emails that I send during different parts of the onboarding process, you know, not letting me forget things that are commonly forgotten. Back in my web design days, it used to be stuff like asking for logins or something. You know, I'd always forget until the project started, and then I'd have to do that really embarrassing email that's like, oh, can you send me the login for this? I can't get in, or I haven't tested it, or something like that. So just having a process, really, really simple, that just tells you, you know, what happens when a client first contacts you to when a client starts working with you. Like, what are the steps that happen? What are the emails that can be written? Are there any documents or templates that you can create to help, you know, maybe a process document or something, or a checklist that a client might need, or, you know, it doesn't really have to be fancy. You know, it has to be useful first and foremost. But this is really handy to have. And I think one thing I kind of think, I don't know what you think about this, but I think most freelancers, I almost want to say every freelancer can benefit and probably should have a VA, like a virtual assistant, even for just like 2 hours a day or something like that, to be the one to put this onboarding process into action. Because freelancing is really hard when you're on your own. You know, you're trying to do the actual work, you're trying to be the expert, but you also want to give a good experience. So you're trying to send these emails, you're trying to collate different links or login files, or remind clients to fill out intake questionnaires and all that kind of stuff. And if you've just got one client, that's fine. If you've got five clients, that's even harder. If you've got 10, that's even harder as one person. And so I think having a VA and a very simple step-by-step onboarding process, not too fancy, that the VA can kind of do for you, is really valuable, and it's going to make your working with your clients so much smoother.
Yeah, I kind of agree with 80% of what you just said there. Again, is going to be the key phrase of this interview.
It's a good percentage, I'll take it.
Is that my experience of offshore VAs, unless you can guarantee them 30 to 40 hours a week, the idea that you're going to hire a decent offshore VA for 10, 20 hours.
Well, I didn't say offshore.
Well, most of the people, well, you didn't, that is true. But the reason I'm saying that is that unless you're a certain level of freelancer where you've got a substantial book of business and you have enough digital marketing and enough flow coming through your agency, you normally have it's feast or famine. It's normally you don't have any clients, and then you have five prospective clients that turn up. And it's only when you get to a certain level where you have a consistent book of business. That's my experience, Laura. It's that most freelancers and micro agency owners, it's feast or famine. And that's why I think it's really difficult to guarantee either domestic or offshore VA the consistency in hours that they're looking for. And that's why I don't think it always pans out. But I think in generally you are correct. That's why I said 80%. Because I think trying to do everything when you have that consistency, you that's the time where you should be farming it out and shouldn't be doing it. The other thing I want to point out is that I think onboarding is really important. And I had this discussion with Kirk last week. Is I learned bitterly that the concept of vacuum. And what I mean by that, Laura, is if there's a vacuum in the process, that vacuum will be filled by the client. And that gets ugly quickly, based on my experience. Can you see where I'm coming from? Because what I mean is, if you don't have a clear signpost of process, the client will fill that process for you quite rapidly. And they have no idea. The only idea they've got is they're paying you. And if things don't work out, you get all the blame.
Yeah, I mean, I think I understand what you mean. If I am wrong, just let me know. But what it sounds like you're talking about is where a client maybe might starts to micromanage. If you haven't led them through a process, they don't know what to expect. They'll start contacting you or calling you up or just kind of expecting that you're just working full time for them.
Yes. And all times, weekend, nights, whatever. Especially if they've had a few drinks.
Yeah. Well, I think the way I try and think about clients micromanaging is that, it's not always going to be the case. Some clients are just, yeah. But in a lot of cases, micromanaging means that they...
I'm a bit gloomy in this interview, aren't I?
A bit.
Well, I'm just putting it as if you listen to this interview, beloved tribe, and learn from it, it's also going to save you a lot of aggro. We've covered some great stuff in this interview.
Well, there's a lot of aggro in the freelancer world, definitely. It's like...
Based on my experience and pulling the arrows out of my back because I've made every mistake under the sun.
Yeah, I think everyone has, but it's just one of those things where, you know, for the most part, micromanaging happens when clients aren't confident or they're feeling a bit insecure about what's going on. Did they make the right choice in hiring you? Are you doing the work? Like, is it going to work out? Is the risk going to pay off? So
I just want to point out is that I can be a little bit blunt, surprise, surprise, Laura. But on the other hand, Kirk's more friendly, more cuddly. But on the other hand, it's not a friendship. These people are always making the assessment. Did I make the right choice? Does this person or this agency know what they're doing? Every conversation, every email, they're always making this assessment, aren't they?
Yeah. And one thing that really helped me, to be honest, was, setting expectations at the start for when they're going to see different things. This worked for the kind of projects that I did. So I would always say, you know, on a Monday, I'm going to email you with something like where we're at now, what's on my plate for this week, and anything that I need from you, for example. So the email might not have been a Monday, but it followed that same template. So those three things, they'd know where we are now, what we're going to be working on next, and what I need from you. So they knew they'd kind of get that every single week. And that kind of meant that they could see progress was happening. They knew they were going to get a check-in and that kind of thing. And then for some other clients, I didn't do this for everyone, but some of the bigger clients where the project was a bit more complex and there needed to be more one-on-one, you know, calls and things, later in the week, I think it was probably on a Thursday, I would say, and then we'll have a catch-up call every Thursday or every Friday or something like that to basically go through like what I've done, any questions that you have, anything that's come up. And I try and encourage them to save questions unless they're urgent for that catch-up call. So they knew that they had these points, sometimes twice a week, where we'd definitely be checking in and they'd be seeing progress. And that really helped, to be honest, because they knew what was coming. And it worked really, I don't know if you've done something like that, but it worked quite well for me to help.
Yeah, I think also a lot of freelancers and small micro to like up to 10 people agencies, they don't realise the larger digital, if they never worked for a large digital agency or a traditional agency, they don't realise that large agencies have individuals that handle clients. That's their job, to handle clients all day.
Yeah.
And you're a freelancer and you're doing the design, the development, client billing. You're doing everything where you're trying to compare yourself to a large agency. But on the other hand, the larger agency is probably charging between 5 and 10 times more than what you're going to be charging. Back over to you, Kurt.
Yeah, I was just listening to your conversation, and in my mind, I'm like, so much of this is fixed by revenue. So much of this is when we recognize our value and just charge more, then we can offer the services and delegate the tasks, right? And that's one of the hardest things. But like, the client portal gives you the process. the onboarding you talked about lends confidence to the customer. All the stuff that you guys are talking about is all answered by revenue. It's a perfect conversation around that. To switch gears, we ask a lot of our guests if they're a fan of artificial intelligence and what they use. And so I'm just kind of, you know, to get to that question, what AI tools are you personally using in your day-to-day, Laura, that help you with your business, if any?
So I pretty much just use Claude. And I use it quite a lot for brainstorming. I have issues with blank canvas syndrome when I'm trying to, you know, come up with an idea or come up with examples. I have to come up with examples a lot. So my background, as I've said, is in web design, but, you know, not every freelancer with Client Portal is a web designer. So I need to think of examples for, you know, developers and copywriters and coaches and that kind of thing. And that can be really hard because I haven't necessarily experienced those projects myself. So I use AI for a lot of brainstorming. I also use it when I have a thought that I need to write out. So I do a lot of writing, like content writing and blogging and things. And I know what point I'm trying to make, but I can't make it. And so I just kind of blurt it into that and say, what am I trying to say? And it kind of helps me out. It's just like a little pal, like that I just have that just helps me when I need it. But that's pretty much all I do with it. Oh, and a lot of spreadsheet stuff because I'm really bad at spreadsheets.
A little pet.
Yeah, it's just like my little pet that sits with me and helps me, comforts me sometimes.
That's nice. It's nice. I've got a couple of tools, some of which Jonathan's introduced me to. And I won't say they're like, you know, 80% of my existence, but they're a great little nudge. It's a good little crutch, right? When you're having that blank moment, they really fill the gap. Like, I can see that.
Yeah.
Jonathan, definitely. Last question to you.
Yeah, this guy over to our last question. Also, are you up for doing some bonus content, Laura, or do you have to disappear on the hour?
Yeah, no, I've got time.
Well, Kurt will probably leave because he's got another appointment. But we do this, and then we're in the podcast part of the show, and then we're going some bonus. We have a chat about your views of WordPress and where it is and that. So, Time Machine, H.G. Wells, or Doctor Who, English. We did interview an English person a couple of weeks ago that didn't watch Doctor Who, Laura.
I've never seen Doctor Who.
Since you never watched it, I was gobsmacked, Laura. So I actually didn't know what to say, which is Kirk was quite amazed. So Time Machine, Doctor Who, if you had your own time machine and you could go back to the beginning of your career, Laura, is there one or two things you love to say to yourself, a little bit of advice you like to give?
Yeah, I think it's just, it's a hard one, but I actually find this question really, really difficult because, you know, if you change the past, then how is butterfly effect, what's going to happen? But I would just say be a bit more confident you know.
Well, you've dealt with me really very easily, Laura. You've just dealt with me with the velvet glove.
Well, I'm a lot older now, but I definitely struggled with confidence and imposter syndrome a lot when I was starting out. I think it kind of held me back a little bit. And then you kind of realize that actually everyone, you know, everyone's in the same boat. Even really, really successful people have the same issues as far as I know anyway. I would just say be more confident, be more focused. I feel like I've wasted so much time over the years trying tricks, you know. You know, those like quick tricks that are going to get you loads more clients that don't pan out because I don't want to do the long-term hard work of the uncomfortable things like, you know, outreach or, you know, going and talking to human beings and that kind of thing. I want something more automated. I've spent a lot of time doing that. So I'd say, you know, there's no hacks, really. You just have to do the uncomfortable things and that's what sets you apart.
You got to do the work.
Yeah,
That's fantastic. We're going to wrap it up for the podcast part of the show, folks, but Laura's agreed to do some bonus content with us. You can watch the whole interview plus the bonus content by going over to the WP Tonic YouTube channel. Laura, what's the best way for people to find out more about you and also Client Portal?
Yeah, so you can go to client-portal.io, which is the website. I also have an ebook and 5-day like mini course on onboarding. If you go to clientexperiencecourse.com, you can find that there. I'm mostly active on Twitter, or X, as it's known now.
I'll call it Twitter forever.
Yeah, I think I feel silly saying X. And I'm Laura Eliz Dunn on there. Project Pack is projectpack.co. And yeah, that's basically me.
Yeah, and you'll find all the links to all the great products Laura has produced in the show notes, which you'll find on the WP Tonic website. Kirk, what was the best way for people to find you and more what you're up to?
I'm pretty dang active on LinkedIn, and it works well for me. I'm the only Kurt Von Annen on LinkedIn, so when you find me, you know you got the right guy. And then for Mañana No Más, it's mananonomas.com, and for agency work.
That's fantastic. And to wrap up the podcast, like I say, we're going to continue the discussion. And we'll see you next week. We've got another great guest. We'll see you soon, folks. Bye. So let's continue the discussion. Kirk has to leave because he's doing something with Lifter LMS on the hour. But it's so how important is WordPress in I don't think you're doing, I got the impression that you're not doing any new client work. I don't know if you've got continuous work for legacy clients that you're still doing, or if it's all Client Portal. But what does WordPress, it's important, do you use it for your marketing websites and that?
Yeah, so my marketing website's on WordPress. Back when I did, I don't do client work anymore, but back when I did, it was all WordPress websites. And then obviously Client Portal's a WordPress plugin. So it's pretty much just been WordPress from day one for me, yeah.
All right. So have you been following the great leaders bust up with WP Engine and that? And if you've been following it a little bit, what do you think's going on there? If you want to pass any view on it.
Yeah, it's a difficult one. I try to be like a politician and, you know, give kind of vague non-answers, but I'm finding it increasingly hard to not just say I'm on WP Engine side, to be honest. The whole thing, I don't know. It just seems, I'm very confused about the whole thing.
Yeah.
I like to try and see both sides, but I'm really struggling to see the side of WordPress just because of the mixed messaging that we've been getting. Mm-hmm. You know, at the beginning, it was not contributing enough, but then it became about licensing, mm-hmm. and then it became about something else. And the questions that people are asking are not being answered. So what I'm thinking internally is like, what is this about? I don't know.
Well, it doesn't really make any sense. And then I have no insight into this at all, folks. So it's just a couple of people have said the same thing to me, but where they've got their insight, I have no idea. But I was told by a couple of people it was basically that he wanted to buy WP Engine. This is the crux of it. And they wanted the venture capital firm that owns WP Engine just wanted a lot more money than he wanted to pay for it, and that kind of started the spiral of them falling out, and it got more and more uglier, this whole business of poaching the CEO of WP Engine, Heather, and giving her a job to somebody who's supposed to be the head of WordPress.org. and it's all kind of murky, dirty stuff, isn't it, Laura?
Yeah, it's just crazy. And I one interesting thing actually that I've been thinking about a lot recently is like obviously one thing that Matt's been saying is that people are confused between WP Engine and WordPress, thinking it's the same. I've sort of started attending WordCamps, and when I go to WordCamps, I've always felt a little bit awkward because I feel like, despite being in WordPress for so long, I don't understand it. I don't understand WordPress. I didn't really know what the link was between WordPress, automatic. You know, I get customers confused about, and I was confused for a very long time about the difference between.
Well, I think like everybody else, I think it was done intentionally, don't you?
Yeah, well, the interesting thing is, and, you know, there's also new things like the foundation. I still don't know what the foundation is. And, you know, now I've realized that it's not actually just me that's confused. I thought there was something wrong with me. I was thinking,
oh, like, there's definitely nothing wrong with you, Laura. If there is anything wrong with this interview, it's me.
No,
I understand it, Laura. I accept my madness.
Yeah, but well, all this whole thing's done is made me even more confused about what WordPress is. And it's kind of hard because I've always run my whole business on WordPress. I feel like I should know a little bit more about it. But the more I try and learn, the more confused I get. And it seems like I am almost everyone else is in the same situation. It doesn't seem like anyone understands how everything works together. So I would love at the end of it to see some clarity in that. In what WordPress is, because it is like it's my whole livelihood for, you know, so I really feel like I should know what it is.
Yeah, this whole he's achieved the impossible in me, you know, because obviously he's not a close friend, but I think he's okay. He's been on my podcast numerous times and we've had chats, and I see him as a friend. That's Jason Cohen, the founder of WP Tonic. He's been on my show a number of times. And he's a great guy and very generous in his time. But I don't have any emotional linkage with WP Engine because it's owned by a venture capitalist. And that would be like having an emotional connection with a white shark. You don't wish it ill, and you wouldn't want pain and suffering to inflict the creature, but you don't expect any emotion back. It's a white shark, you know. Yeah. It that's not in its makeup. So I don't expect it that from it, and that's my feeling towards WP Engine. It's a well run machine that's owned by a white shark, and I don't expect the great leader, as I call him, has done almost the impossible. He's made me feel sympathy for the right shark. Is this making any sense, Laura?
That's exactly how I feel. I feel like, I don't think I've said this before in like private chats and things, like I'm like, I never would have seen myself as sympathizing with, you know, a company as giant as WP Engine, you know, because a company is a company, right? Like it's not a person. It's different from like a small business where the person is the business, and by insulting the business, you're kind of insulting the person. Like WP Engine.
This is $100 million hosting company, isn't it?
Yeah. But I feel like I want to like protect it. I am my client portal is hosted on WP Engine as well. So there's that. I've always had good experiences with them. I've always really liked their support. But yeah, I'm just surprised. I almost don't like how on their side I am, but I can't feel a different way because the whole thing just seems so bizarre.
No, I don't get. I've attempted to keep a balanced approach to it because at any stage, WP Engine might just give him the money that he's asking for because they just do the math and it's just business to him. On the other hand, or they might sell to him in the end. They come to an agreement and it. An automatic. I think one of the problems is that his recent interview on Disrupt, run by TechCrunch, he said that this is, I'm talking about automatic here, Laura. He publicly stated at that interview, which was very well done, much better than my interviews, Laura, that he owns 82% of automatic. And this is a company that over six rounds, over a 12-plus year period, has obtained near $1 billion of external investment. And he's saying that he has 82% of the company, which I can't pass a remark on, but it sounds very strange to me. And I think he has obtained an enormous amount of external investment. And I would imagine that they're asking a return. And I really don't see how automatic, unless it buys something like WP Engine, it has any ability to produce the kind of returns that kind of investment necessitates. Are you following my logic at all, Laura?
Yeah, I do. But it's just one of those things where, because it's still just all speculation, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. We don't really know. It's all smoke and mirrors, isn't it?
Yeah. And that's kind of the hard part. But it's like, you know, there's a lot of people who rely on WordPress, and we're sort of realizing that there's actually this one person who can affect it.
Yeah. And do you, are you also puzzled? Because I've interviewed him twice. And he is extremely intelligent, and he handled me as easily as you have handled me. And he's very friendly and very passionate about WordPress. And you've got to give him his due. He's got this friendly air, and he goes to the WordCamps, and he will go on podcasts, and he will smile at me and handle me very easily. But then there's this kind of dark side. There seems to be this side where it's all kind of a very complicated company structure, and this relationship with the foundation, and he has these discussions with the CEO of WP Engine to replace somebody that's already supposed to have the job. And none of it adds up, does it?
No, it's really strange. It's like a split personality thing, or you know, there's different facades that, you know. And I know everyone's, you know, people are complicated. People aren't just like good or bad or that kind of thing.
Well, I'm definitely not.
Everyone's got a bit of, you know, everyone's got like secrets or things, you know.
I'm really boring, Laura. I haven't got many secrets. That's sad, isn't it? I hope you've got a lot of secrets, because I'm disappointed in my life, really, because I'm a boring fart. Really.
I bet we could find something. I don't know. Something a long time ago. Who knows? I don't know. But I just think people are kind of complicated. And the only thing I can kind of think of, and I think, okay, I don't want to just say he's bad or whatever, even though he's not coming across.
I don't. I never wanted to do that at all, really.
Well, the only thing I can think of is that I've seen before people who actually have really good intentions and are really, you know, trying to do the right thing. Sometimes they get screwed over a lot in their life, and they get a lot of people take advantage, because nice people always do. And eventually something just snaps in them. And they just get so sick of it, and they just kind of go the opposite direction and become kind of nasty. You know, I've seen that happen before. So I'm thinking, maybe that's what's happened with him. Maybe he was really nice. Maybe he's been screwed over a lot, and now he's just snapped. That's just speculation again.
To finish with a little bit of sarcasm, a bit of English sarcasm, the thing that came out in the interview is, it's come out before. He seems to have a real need, a love of surveys. Consistently in these interviews, I've run this survey, and 14% of the people get confused with WP Tonic, or all the latest interviews he's done, he seems to have this thing around surveys. And secondly, his mother seems to have a strong influence on on his business choices. And I think you should listen to your mum. My mum's gone a long time ago, but bless her heart, I would listen to her. I wouldn't do everything she suggests, but I always give her time. But he seems strongly influenced by his mother. But that's a bit of English sarcasm. Yeah. I think we're end it. Sorry, go on, Laura.
I was going to say, it's always like bringing your mum into something, it makes it harder to take it seriously in a way. Like, it just feels very,
I've been wickedly English sarcasm. I couldn't help it. I've been here for 18 years, but I'm still very English, I think.
Yeah.
Thank you, Laura. It's been a fantastic chat. I actually think you dealt with me really easily. I pushed back a little bit, but you dealt with it really easily. And I think we covered a load of stuff, actually. Hopefully in the new year, you might come back. I did enjoy our discussion. We're going to end it now, folks. We'll see you next week. Bye.
Hey, thanks for listening. We really do appreciate it. Why not visit the Mastermind Facebook group? And also, to keep up with the latest news, click wp-tonic.com/newsletter. We'll see you next time.